Welcome, everyone. The event is live. John, please take it away.
Thanks, Annie. Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's live tech talk using replication for backups. There are better options. This event was organized by the hardworking folks at AWS Insider and sponsored by Clumio, the company that is redefining data protection for Amazon S3. I'm John K. Waters, editor-in-chief in the Converse 360 group of 1105 Media, and I'll be your moderator for today's talk. And I'm joined today by Adam Russo, field CTO at Clumio. Hi, Adam.
Hey, John. Thanks.
So I want to say a little bit about our guest. Adam has more than a decade of experience in IT with a focus on storage and data protection. He's been involved with everything from field engineering to product building and sales, and he is here today to peel back the onion, so to speak, on a multifaceted security issue that few companies really fully understand. But before we get going with that, I've got a few housekeeping details to talk to you about. This tech talk is being recorded for later access. Keep an eye out for an email with a link to that recording. It'll be coming your way in the next few days. We'll also leave some time for questions near the end of the conversation, but you can type your questions into the Q&A box at any time. We'll do our very best to get to all of them. And finally, just before we get going here, I would like to ask the attendees to answer a poll question. It should just take a few minutes. It's up on your screen now. Pretty straightforward. Your feedback is really important to us. And so, and while you're doing that, let's talk about today's topic. So thousands of organizations, probably including many of yours, rely on replication to safeguard their Amazon S3 data and AWS databases. And replication is an excellent choice for operational recovery when you just need to undo your last change. But what if you need to roll back your data to a specific point in time, which is often the case in the event of cyber attacks, such as wipeouts, ransomware, or user-driven deletions and overwrites? This is when replication shows its limitations. So that was faster than I thought it was going to be. How are we doing on the poll questions? Did we get the results? There they are. Yay.
All right.
Okay. So what is it? So what is that? What do you think about that, Adam?
Yeah. So, I mean, good mix all around. Not super surprised though either. Right. I mean, that's typically what I hear from a lot of our customers too. It's really, really, just general challenge for customers. I think, you know, to your intro there, I think we're definitely peel back the onion here today. Hopefully alleviate a lot of tears as well too. peeling back that onion today though. That typically comes up in this conversation. So yeah.
Okay. Well, let me hit you with my first question. Let's start with Amazon S3. When Amazon S, he tried to say S3 replication is right.
Yeah. So even taking kind of a quick step back even too. So with S3, I'd say almost one of the questions I get a lot of times too is why do anything, right? One of the key things about S3 is that it's hugely durable and reliable, 11 nines of availability. One of the reasons why it is probably, I don't think this is going to be a hot take, probably the first Amazon service most people used. It was one of their first service as well too. But as people have gone out throughout their cloud journey, S3 has always gone along for the ride. Sometimes it's been just for, doing archive, doing web images, things like that, where even oftentimes too, sometimes it was because it was so low cost and durable, customers would just throw things on there because it's safer to throw it there instead of delete it. And then 6 months later have somebody angry go, where is this? Well, if it's costing you a penny a month to keep it instead of answer awkward questions in 6 months, it's probably okay. But the big change I've noticed too is that I actually have a slide here to kind of illustrate this one too. Oops, went ahead. One too many there. It's just that the way S3 is used today then, versus where it was used 5-10 years ago, it's now really driving a lot of very, very critical applications. Data lakes across the board. Every organization is trying to get better insight into their data that they have today and how they can, kind of please their customers and do more advanced things with the data they have. and their own end users. That's huge. S3 is a core component of that, along with other services like Snowflake, Redshift, things like that. A lot of cloud native apps, people have left the data center or in that process, and now they're evolving into these more cloud native applications. So that's coming up more and more. And cloud native applications like serverless technology that is highly resilient, like S3, and then just the whole Internet of Things logging. That's a huge, huge amount of data that's coming in from all these different data sources all over the place. Those are all landing on S3 now too. So where it once was kind of this dumping ground of just let me throw things there, I know it's going to be safe and low cost, it's now really a huge driver for businesses nowadays. So that's where this whole kind of shift I've seen in the customer base with a lot of customers, that they're having this major challenge now of, what do I do with this? I need to do more than just keep it here and turn on versioning on this bucket and do a lot more. So that's really where, to your question there, I think replication first comes in. So if we talk a little bit about what replication actually is, at a base level, you're taking a copy of stuff in one bucket and you're putting it in another bucket. Replication, it's been around for a long time, right? There's a lot more kind of under the covers there as well too. It's not just that simple. You have to define where you want to start, where you want to end. Is that going to go within the same region, within the same account? There's other certain use cases around replication too, where it's not just for data protection. Maybe it's for application availability. And those are some additional business decisions that you have to make as a customer and what your data means to you. And from a data protection standpoint, though, which is really the topic today, that's where even though S3 is very, very durable and resilient, it doesn't protect against accidents. And that's the biggest cause of downtime, since the beginning of time, right? Is humans do things by accident, sometimes maliciously, but everybody makes mistakes. That's why backup is a big part of the overall tech industry. That's why data protection in general is a huge, huge component for everyone, is making sure they keep those applications online and available to their customers and end users there. So that's where, you look at S3, highly durable, but I need an extra copy somewhere else. How do you do that? Well, you can turn on versioning and you have some extra copies within that bucket, but that does fall down due to accidental deletions and everything else. So the next phase to that customers tended to go down was, the only other thing available to me is to move my data from one bucket to another. And that's where replication, fully came into the mix, which if you think about backups in general, you're pretty much taking a copy of one thing and putting it in another place. That's backups. So it does make sense in that sense that with replication, you're taking things from A and putting them in B. There's a lot of just nuance with that, though, that I think this is where it tends to trip up customers in many ways there, too, and how they enable this. But there definitely are places where it does fit for like that availability of applications. I have users in the East Coast of the U.S. and then also in Europe and also in Australia. I have compute that also needs to be done locally for speed reasons. I can't have compute in Europe running on an S3 bucket in the US. There's too much latency there for the data I need to crunch. So that's where I need to move the data to where the compute is, which is another problem that we've had to deal with in the industry for years and years and years. So that's a huge place where replication comes in. Really about just that end user experience for a highly performant application, less so on the backup side though. It's a very long-winded answer to your initial question.
It's fascinating. That's as far as replication could take people. Now maybe talk about where it falls short. Maybe with some examples if you've got them.
Sure. Yeah, and I think that is truly key there. So it's really the right tool for the right job. Right. So replication, hugely important for that performance and application, maybe some simpler use cases even too, where I need to just copy something regularly over to a development environment, a test environment, things like that, where it's just I need that copy moved somewhere else on a more consistent basis. But replication does not at all help with things like accidental deletion, the malicious attackers, the fact that I need to roll back to a specific point in time, because the issue with replication is you put something in your primary bucket, it's going to go over to your secondary bucket. So if I delete something in the primary bucket, that delete marker goes over to the secondary bucket. Mm-hmm. And then lifecycle rules kick in, and eventually that object is completely deleted and you might not realize it right away. Mm-hmm. You know, so anything you do on one side ends up on the other side. That is one of the big places that it tends to fall short, especially if you're looking at it from a data protection standpoint specifically. You know, and that's where, you know, it is definitely a big challenge. But, you know, to kind of illustrate that here, even software code pushes is one that I see come up more and more. We definitely live in an age of, you know, infrastructure as code. Nobody's, you know, manually deploying upgrades to anybody's applications nowadays. It's all an automated pipeline. That's where a lot of accidents also happen, because it's automated. You click the button, it goes. You do have a lot of controls in place. But if you accidentally wipe out a whole folder in an S3 bucket, there's no going back from that. It's mm-hmm. going to go over to the other side as well, too. So having a rollback plan, and oftentimes, too, when we're talking about S3, we're not talking about terabytes. We're talking about petabytes. You know, we're at a scale of billions of objects, millions of objects. So how do you know one out of a billion objects was impacted by something? You don't mm-hmm. know until you go looking for that object. No. That's a needle in a haystack situation, too. And then when you find out that there's an error, it's really challenging for customers to find that good point in time potentially to roll back to. And it's not something you can really do with a replication solution.
So you said something about this, but say more about what's at risk here specifically. I don't want that to be the dumb question of the day. I still get one more, but talk about what's at risk.
Yeah, for sure. I think uptime, customers, you know, your end customer impacts, right? As far as if they're down, there's a money element associated with that, right? The cost of downtime goes up and up by the day for everybody, especially just in the current, you know, economic climate we're in too. A lot of newer tech companies out there too are also SaaS based, right? There's been a big wave of new SaaS providers. I represent a SaaS provider as well too, but downtime in SaaS is something that means, you know what, I'm going to go find your competitor and I can easily onboard you to your competitor. I don't need to take a year to plan a move for a lot of these, you know, SaaS applications, especially consumer ones. Mm-hmm. So having that cost of downtime because of a systems issue, because of an accidental deletion or a failed deployment, could mean you lose revenue and you lose customers as well. It's not mm-hmm. even just a, you know, hiccup and you're down for a shorter period of time. It has a much bigger impact to it. And that's really where I think we see a lot of customers starting to realize that a lot more, and what impact S3 has in their overall ecosystem and how critical it is to their overall environment, how challenging it is just because of its size and velocity of change rate. As well on that side.
Fascinating. It's kind of a brave new world. Okay, we talked about where replication falls short. We talked about what's at risk. Maybe time to talk about the alternative. What should we do instead?
Yeah, I think that goes, I mean, just to talk a little bit more, I think to paint the picture a little bit more here too. If you look at where it actually fits in, and this kind of gives a little bit more to visualize what we were just talking about there too,
sure.
Is, you know, based on that availability and that locality of the performance, that's where, in this chart that's on the screen right now too, this is like AWS 101. They give you this as soon as you sign up for your first AWS account of, like, you know, the where you need to fit in the overall matrix when you're thinking about how do you keep your environment available, right? One of the core tenets of AWS is to plan for failure. This is a key piece of that planning for failure too. How do you get back from something bad happening? So there is this overall, you know, kind of matrix of, you know, backups, pilot lights into more of that active. Most oftentimes for S3 solutions, you don't need that active, right? You already have that kind of resilience in the nature of S3 itself. across multiple availability zones and that durability we already talked about. Mm-hmm. So that's really kind of where a solution that provides true backup, where you're taking that copy and you can roll back to certain points in times and things like that. That's really where a solution like Clumio tends to fit in into that overall matrix, you know, going from left to right on the screen here. And what we ultimately bring to the table is a very interesting challenge too. I think one of the other big challenges that anybody who's very intimate with S3 quickly finds is this concept of kind of a small block challenge.
Small block challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the small block challenge is that S3 lives and dies by 128 KB file size.
Mm.
Pretty big. You know, it's object storage, so it does make sense. And, you know, in a world where you think of I'm throwing, you know, Pixar's throwing movies in S3 and, you know, Twitter's uploading all the you know, selfies and things like that. Those are big things that you would stick in S3. But more and more applications are leveraging things smaller than that, much smaller than that. AWS treats everything smaller than that as 128K size in S3. So if you have a million 1K files, you actually have in S3 a million 128K files if you want to move it at all. Mm-hmm. So if you're doing something like replication or leveraging the native backup tools or even trying to do intelligent tiering, all of those things get bloated into 128K size. That drives costs up, which is something nobody wants to do nowadays as well. And that was where, when we were talking to a lot of our customers who are also trying to solve this challenge, the math just never worked out for them. Because they had this small block challenge they tried to adapt around. And that was really where we worked with a lot of our customers as well, too, to come up with a solution that could really take advantage of the fact that we don't care about 128K block size. Our solution being just a SaaS provider, kind of focus in that backup space, we can take a look at what's available to us and then, you know, evolve and adapt around that to really be a purpose-built solution. So one of the key things that we even solve for customers is if you have a lot of small block sizes, we'll do things like bundling. So if you have a million of them, or if you have 128 1K files, or that would be, 128K block sizes if you're trying to replicate version, anything like that. With us, we'll bundle those all together into one object that's 128K in size, and then we'll move that over. So there's just massive efficiencies there, both from a pricing thing, like as I mentioned, that's a huge one for customers that are trying to solve that challenge, but from a performance standpoint too. So a million objects in an S3 bucket's not like you get there really, really quickly. I kind of always had pictured a million being a big number. And S3, that's a small bucket in S3 land, right? A million objects is pretty small. But when you translate into that into millions to billions of objects, that's really another area where replication ends up being super expensive as a backup. Because that could even just be moving it from A to B and you're trying to move it to a lower tier in that secondary destination bucket. You're still paying that 128K tax on top of it and moving that data. It'll then hit you again on the restore if you'd like it as well. And backup's only ever as good as the restore associated with it. So that was one of the very complex things for us to kind of handle. And we had a lot of, you know, thought going into that solution. But it's one that isn't obvious, I don't think, too, right? When you're thinking about backup and recovery, typically aren't thinking of, well, how big is the thing I'm trying to move on a granular level? You're thinking of how big is my bucket that I want to back up? And that's kind of the other area we came in. S3 buckets are massive, and there's a lot of critical data in those systems. As I mentioned there, there's a lot of stuff you don't probably need to back up, though, too, as well. If you have server log files that are going into an S3 bucket that is multi-petabytes and has like a critical user data in it, do you really care about backing up those log files? Probably not. And that's another area that we came in. We allow our customers to actually filter down within the S3 buckets themselves and get really granular about what they care about backing up. Mm. So they can back up exactly what's important for them, as opposed to backing up everything. Once again, helps on that cost side of the house. But even from a recovery standpoint, it's a lot quicker for me to restore 100 terabytes in a 1 petabyte bucket as opposed to restoring 1 petabyte and then peeling out the 100 terabytes I cared about. So that is another just huge impact that we had when we were thinking about the design here. Even getting down to letting users pick their storage class too. So if the standard stuff is all you care about and anything that tiers down to the lower storage class, you can omit that from our solution. Only really focus on that operational recovery, which we see a lot of customers leverage for things like ransomware recovery purposes, which is another one of our big key tenets. And just even to step back here too, us as a solution, we do everything in an air gap matter. So a virtual air gap. So we have on our side a dedicated account for each one of our customers that they don't have direct access to. So all of their backups go directly to us. We are built on AWS as well. So it's not a long journey or a long trip to get the data over to us. But it is, there's kind of a firewall in place from a security standpoint, ensuring that nothing bad that might happen in the customer's environment can bleed over and impact their backups at all. So we definitely did a lot of innovation, I think, there too, to help customers really tackle this complicated challenge, not only from just how do I back up something as big as S3, but how do I handle even the smaller smaller details that are typically harder to come by and something you wouldn't think until you're starting to design a solution, plan for a solution. Because that's one of the best things about AWS is it's a builder's paradise, right? You can build anything you want. Some things, though, you're better off just not building. It's better to find a purpose-built solution off the shelf to really get that time to value and save a lot of time. And that was something we worked directly hand-in-hand with a lot of our customers to try to solve that specifically on the S3 side.
It sounds like that's sort of the salient message for people are saying, okay, S3, our old way of doing this is not going to work for us, but it's often hard to sell the new way of doing it, but the cost savings seems significant.
Yeah, that's a huge part, a huge component of it. That small block problem comes in big there as well, but then just really being able to get super granular and finite about what you actually care about backing up and what's critical to you and your business versus the whole thing. Comparing to some of the native tooling there as well, we also don't require versioning to be enabled on the buckets, which does also bloat cost for our customers as well. Sometimes you think, well, why wouldn't you turn on versioning? That's kind of your first step of, fixing accidents. There's some applications that are so busy and writing so many small files and everything else that having versioning would just the cost of goods to create that application just goes out the window. It'd be too expensive if versioning enabled, which those are also the situations where having a backup solution is absolutely critical. Because you got nothing else at that point, because replication, you need versioning enabled as well. A lot of those customers, when we talk to them, they just are, they're crossing their fingers every day. It's kind of how they run their business in those buckets, because they don't have another alternative, unfortunately.
So as long as you're talking about Clumio, I know you've got a slide about the architectural overview of Clumio. Maybe just as long as we're here, we might as well share that.
Sure, definitely. This is kind of an interesting one too. When we went about building the S3 backup solution too, we worked hand in hand with a lot of some really large enterprises. One of the main design partners we had were Cox Automotive. So huge in the automotive space, Kelly Blue Book. We have some pretty cool case studies that we did with them as well too. They had a huge trouble in that regard, right? They were going to build it themselves. So they have a huge team of engineers, very, very capable engineers, cloud engineers who know AWS inside and out. And it was going to take them over a year to come up with a way to handle their large S3 environment from a backup standpoint. And that was a lot of time that would have been spent on securing something as opposed to really innovating and helping out, expand their own markets. And that was where we worked with them on kind of what would work, what would not work. And we came up with a solution and we built it pretty much a third of the time. And the way the design is here, over on the left, that's customer environment. So the AWS account, all the buckets they have in that environment. Mm-hmm. And then from a deployment model, once again, we're a SaaS service. So over on the right, we have a dedicated, what we call an arena account for every one of our customers. So
you call it an arena account?
Yeah, an arena account. And that's where pretty much all of the backups end up living. Mm-hmm. So we're built on AWS. Pretty much everything is very much a serverless architecture for us too. But the way we do backups is we'll deploy we'll leverage cross-account IAM roles. Very, very customizable and security driven there too, with permissions, boundaries, and things like that. And we'll deploy that either via CloudFormation or Terraform. So we're a big believer in infrastructure as code to be able to scale. And then that allows us to do some basic functions and API calls directly on the S3 buckets themselves. So the first thing we do is we'll S3 has something called an inventory file. So we tell AWS generate a new inventory file for us, and that just basically says here's all the stuff in the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty simple list, but once again, if you're thinking of S3, it's a big file. It's not a little tiny. So it takes, they only can generate one a day, mm-hmm. at this point, because it takes a while to generate. So we tell S3 generate a new inventory file. And for the very first backup, after we apply like a backup policy to, the bucket, we'll, look at the inventory file. We'll move all the, we'll read it and we'll move all of those objects over onto our arena account. And then the next day we'll wait for the new inventory file. We'll look at both of them and we'll say, all right, what's different between the two? And we'll move over the difference. So we're doing an incremental backup kind of forever after that. We place that though on our side as well, the inventory file, so we can always reference it. But on top of that, we also have something called continuous data protection too, because as I mentioned, we only get that file from AWS, the inventory file, once a day. So that would mean we could only really do backups once a day. Well, a lot can happen in a day, which usually means there's a lot, it's a 24-hour RPO for customers, right? Recovery point objective, which is probably not the best thing in the world for most mission critical applications. So we introduced as well something called continuous backup. So when you enable that on a bucket, we'll actually start looking at event bridge on S3. So any new events we see come in, we do what we call a micro backup. So it's kind of a behind the scenes term for us. Mm-hmm. Micro backup means tiny. So we do it every 15 minutes on the whole S3 bucket. So 15 minute mark, we're reading that event bridge. How many events happened? How many new objects were created, deleted, modified in those 15 minute chunks? And then we'll pull all those over and we'll continue to do that every 15 minutes throughout the day. Now, sometimes buckets are very, 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 very busy. Maybe we miss an event. Maybe Event Bridge has a hiccup. So we also need to do validation. So we still leverage that once a day S3 inventory file. And once a day, we'll make sure everything we are grabbing in those 15-minute chunks is everything we were supposed to grab. Mm-hmm. So we'll do a validation. If for some reason there was a hiccup and we missed 10 objects, we'll pull them over at that point. Still with the same timestamp and everything else too. So that's a bit of the architecture for us too. The other big thing as part of this too, I kind of mentioned it earlier with the small block problem, the bundling. The other thing that happens with S3, especially in larger environments, is there's this concept of partitions in mm-hmm. S3. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's just kind of certain parts of the bucket have different partitions associated with it with different objects. So, you need to be able to scale considerably in the S3 world if you're talking about backing up millions to billions to petabytes of things in one go. If you think of an actual physical bucket, you could either go top down and take out the objects one by one, which would take a really, really long time. And that would be if you're going the partition route. You only can really access one partition at a time. So what we ended up doing is basically we end up shoehorning in between the S3 bucket and the bucket essentially on the Clumio side of the house, pretty much a Clumio partition. And that allows us, if you kind of think of that same physical bucket, poke holes all around the outer perimeter of it, and we're able to use via Lambda functions, start taking the objects out of all those holes to move them all over. So we have massive scalability as a result of that. We're able to do at rate right now buckets that are 30 billion objects in size, which is pretty big. So that's hundreds of petabytes at that point. And we're able to even keep up with 15 million plus objects changing in an hour time frame. Mm-hmm. Right? So very, very scaling, right? New 15 million new writes every hour is a large amount of data, and we're able to suck that all in, and no problem whatsoever using that partitioning workaround that we have.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay, this might be my dumb question of the day. I report a lot about ransomware attacks. It seems like almost a daily occurrence these days. It seems pretty obvious in a way, but maybe you could just specifically address how this architecture, protects users against ransomware attacks.
Yeah, that's a great segue too, because I talked a lot about backup, and backup's definitely challenging, I think, in the S3 world. But backup's kind of, I always say, Clumio's not necessarily a backup company, we're a restore company, right? Because the restore is the thing you care about at the end of the day.
Right.
Yeah, 9 times out of 10. And with, during COVID, obviously ransomware went on a skyrocketing rise. Everybody was getting impacted for it. That was the number one initiative, I think, for pretty much every C level in every company in 2020, 2021, even now. It's still up there with cost cutting measures as well. I noticed, I think, in the industry, there was a lot of like miscommunication on what you needed to do to figure out this ransomware problem. Everybody just went out and bought ransomware prevention technologies and said, well, bad guy can't get in, I'm good. And
that box, right?
Yeah. If they can't get in, I'm good. Well, that's half of the equation. The true fact of the matter is they're still going to get in. So you also have to be able to recover when the bad guy does get in.
Right.
Be locked up as much as you need. But I mean, one of the most common ways bad actors get in is through like phishing schemes. So if you have 10,000 employees, can you guarantee that all 10,000 of them aren't going to click on the, checkbox to check on their UPS tracking?
One of them's going to go for it. They're getting very sophisticated. It looks like it came from the boss,
Yes. CEO sent me an email. I better answer it. Right? He really needs those gift cards right now. So let me go figure that one out. That's something, kind of going back to like human error, which we talked about is like the biggest cause of downtime. It's one of still the biggest causes for those security breaches too. Just human error happens. So, as much prevention as you can have in that ransomware space, you do also have to plan for the fact that something bad's going to happen and you need to recover from it. And that's really where Clumio fits in. We have some really innovative things we do on the recovery side too, because especially with something like S3, if I have billions of objects, petabytes of data, even hundreds of terabytes of data, through the laws of physics, it's going to take a while to restore. That's just nature, right? It's going to take time. But that's probably not time that your customers care about. They want to use the application that's no longer working right now.
Right.
So we have a couple of really cool things we can do with that. We previewed this at reInvent. It's not quite GA for us yet on the S3 side, but something called Instant Access. So we're backing up all of your S3 buckets into our little world there in our arena accounts. It, when you want to roll back to, say, noon, because that was when you said the event happened at 12:01, so I want to roll back to noon. Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to take you a while to roll back a petabyte to noon, but what we can actually do is while you're doing that restore, we can actually provision out S3 endpoint directly for you, and that's the instant access. So that's an endpoint on the backup that we're holding on to. So I can give that to you or to your application owner, and they'll at least have instantaneous read access to the backup files while you're waiting for the restore to occur and finish. So that reduces the overall downtime you have. It's not writable, mm-hmm. so there's definitely you're going to be limping along, but that also greatly helps. Additionally, too, one of the other big things is if you have a whole account that's compromised, so if your AWS account is compromised and your S3 bucket's in there, the last place you probably want to restore to is back to the compromised account. Probably the worst idea to do that. So mm-hmm. right out of the gate with our technology and through things like infrastructure as code with things like Terraform, you can spin up and create a brand new AWS account, deploy us into it, those cross-account IAM roles as part of that, and then you can instantly start restoring to that brand new account very, very rapidly. And we have a lot of flexibility and functionality there. And you don't have to restore the whole bucket either. If you only need 5 objects, cool, restore 5 objects. If you only need 1 folder or prefix, restore only that. And then if you do need the whole bucket, that helps there as well, too. Everything we do as well, just from a security mindset as well, all FIPS level end-to-end encryption, inflate at rest, kind of table stakes in that sense too. But even beyond that, we do let our customers bring their own AWS encryption keys as well too.
We talk about compliance. I don't think we have. That's another challenge that users are facing.
Yeah, that's another, once again, another huge one. All of the and that goes back to the, now there's things in S3 that have never been there before from a criticality. A lot of users in the past would use things like MACI just to see if, did I accidentally put PII data in S3 that we didn't know about, right? And that would help with the compliance nature of, GDPR and things like that. There's things in here that shouldn't be in here. Let me go put them in the bucket that's supposed to have the PII data, things like that. But more and more now it's just user application, and those user applications, be it financial, be it healthcare, whatever it might be, those now have, because it's user data, customer data, they have to go under the same controls that traditional servers and databases had to go through in the past. And we help a lot with that. We have like the basic helping of all IT related security things like, single sign-on, auto user provisioning. The encryption I mentioned earlier, those are just kind of the base things, audit logging capabilities, are just kind of those base IT level, table stakes. But beyond that, the bigger challenge of, number one, your data, most compliance certifications, or controls state that your backup, or you have to have a backup. Number one, you have to have a backup. So if you have to have a backup, you either have to the backup has to be from S3. Well, versioning doesn't really count as a backup. And the other part of backup usually is, from a control standpoint, not only do you need a backup, the backup has to be somewhere else. Can't be in the primary account. Mm-hmm. So that means you either have to use replication, because then you can move it to a different account. We talked pretty much in depth, I think, of why that's not always the best option, especially for that type of use case, or you use a backup solution. Mm-hmm. There are not a lot of backup solutions to backup S3 on the market effectively today. So that's one of the key areas we help out with customers on, that and meeting their compliance goals of just having that air gap where we're separate from their security controls and domains themselves. We make it really easy from an auditing standpoint. One of the cool things that we do as a company, we dog food our own product too. We're a SaaS service, and we're taking customers' most critical, important data and taking a copy of it over on our end. So first question I get from every customer I ever talk to when I tell them that is, let me see your certifications. Let me see your SOC 2 report and things like that. So in order to meet all of those guidelines, we're actually using Clumio to back up ourselves as well to keep them those parts of our infrastructure fully compliant for those rigorous standards. And it's great that we can extend that as well to customers, even kind of tangential to compliance, but very much in the same ballpark too. So another kind of industry trend, we see a lot more of cyber insurance. Most companies have nowadays, when they're doing their renewals now, this has been more prevalent since the ransomware outbreak that we talked about earlier. They're requiring their customers have backups that are somewhere else, air-gapped essentially. So that's another area too, where, okay, in order to keep my cyber insurance, I need to have a solution here. That's obviously something that we can also help out with.
I know you've got some more slides. I don't want to cut you off, but maybe I've asked a bunch of questions. Maybe we should see what the audience wants to know.
Yeah, let's hear from them.
Let me ask you, so here's the, we'll go with this one first. Why not just use AWS backup to do this?
Yeah. So it's definitely a useful tool, right? Actually, I think both of our solutions came out very close at the same time as well, too. The main reasons I would say that small block problem is one of the big ones that we see a lot, and scaling. So that solution tops out at about 3 billion objects per bucket. Pretty big though, right? Every bucket's not going to be more than 3 billion. But if it's above 3 billion, can't use it anyway, right? It's just not supported. So that's kind of a, if you have 3 billion in one objects, okay, you can't use that. Check that one off the list. Outside of that though, that small block problem really makes it cost disadvantageous. The cost of that solution is pretty high already, but then when you're kind of mirroring that with the fact that basically every small block file is going to look like it's 128K, that does also increase a lot of the cost there. And versioning is required. So I think we talked about that a little bit too, of not every application and every S3 bucket is good with having versioning enabled. That's one of the key ones there. And just the complexity, I think, of management across multiple environments. So being able to do instantaneous restore that's not in granular restore is not something you can do with the restore experience that they provide today.
Fascinating. I want to remind attendees that you can type your questions into the Q&A box at any time. We'll do our best to get to all of them here as we near the end of this tech talk. So we'll go with this one. How do you ensure my data is separated from your other customers' data in your vault?
I'm an honest guy. You should believe me. Was that? That's a great one too, right? We're very, very keen on that. Everybody does get that dedicated environment for them. It's part of like our SOC 2 report. We need NDAs obviously to share that as well too. But even beyond that, the cross account roles that we're deploying there to do the backup and restore, we also have unique external ID associated with that. So that even prevents like a man in the middle attack, right? If somebody was going to try to like update that and try to like send data to a different bucket or something like that, that also prevents a lot of that too. But the architecture itself is built in a way where we want to make sure every customer's environment is completely dedicated. But the extra layer of security that we allow our customers to bring to with just tying in their own AWS encryption keys gives that extra layer of security too, because that way too, kind of talked about this earlier, right? SaaS solutions are easy to walk away from. We hope our customers never walk away, but if they do need to, for one reason or another, they can flip their keys. And then that also kind of serves as a way to know that nobody has access to that either too. So it's kind of a combined one there.
Awesome. Okay. We've got time for one more question. How do you handle backup and recovery of large buckets?
Yeah. The petabyte ones. Those ones definitely get tricky, right? Just from how much data is in there and the velocity of the data. So that really is where the continuous backup, I think, helps out significantly. So the very first backup we do of the multi-petabyte one, that's not getting done in a day, right? That's going to take days to weeks. That's, once again, physics at that point. You can only move so much data in a given period of time. We do have a lot of optimizations in there to speed that up. But there's also a lot of care and feeding that has to go into it. I think this is probably more of the basis for the question. If it's a petabyte bucket that's critical to you and you want to back it up, guess what? It's probably heavily used as well. There's certain like API limits and things like that where we're using API calls to back up the data, and then you got a ton of API calls coming in just for your native application. And that's where, through a lot of engineering effort too, we're able to throttle some of that too. So if you do have a very busy bucket, we want to make sure your applications aren't impacted by that at all. So we optimize for, we want your application to be happy. And if it takes us a little bit longer to do that first backup, that's okay. And customers typically are okay with that too, in something that size. And then from there, we're able to turn on that continuous backup, and then we're able to keep up with them, especially through a lot of our serverless architecture and functionality that we have.
Fascinating. That looks like that's all the time we have for this this live tech talk. I want to thank Adam Reschro, field CTO at Clumio, for a fascinating conversation. Thank you, Adam. It was really a pleasure to talk with you today.
Awesome. Thanks so much, John. Really appreciate it.
Remember, just a couple of reminders. Remember, you guys, this recording will be available soon. Keep an eye out for an email with a link to that recording. It'll be coming your way in the next couple of days. That's it. Thanks, everyone. And let me not forget to thank our sponsor, Clumio, for making this possible. Without your help and your sponsorship, this would not be possible. Well, thanks, everyone. Have a great day.